Welcome to Spectrum Policy 101, brought to you by Policy Tracker, which produces a newsletter, research and training courses about spectrum management. Hello, I'm Tim Jenkins with Episode 3, Spectrum Liberalisation. In simple terms, you know, up until the 1980s, you could use the airwaves that surround us if your government decided to give you access. The whole range of users, from amateur radio enthusiasts to satellite companies and broadcasters, got access to spectrum because national governments, or almost independent agencies that they set up, approved it. Very often this was free, or if there was a fee, it was in business terms a tiny amount of money. That all changed with the arrival of mobile telecom firms. They got licenses for token amounts as well, to start with. But within a few years, they became some of the richest companies in the world. So, countries like the United States started auctioning mobile spectrum to the highest bidder, making hundreds of millions of dollars in the process. And that was the start of spectrum liberalization. But has it been a success? How widely can market mechanisms be used? And do they meet social obligations, like ensuring that people living in the countryside can also get good mobile internet? Or that everyone can watch the national TV? To explore that issue, I'm joined by two economists who've advised governments around the world. From the UK, Professor Martin Cave, and from Telecom Paris, Professor Gérard Poggerel. Welcome, both of you.
Hello.
Hello.
So, gentlemen, how did we get from government knows best to let's sell spectrum? When did the market get involved? Martin?
Well, I guess it got involved, as you said, with the development of mobile, when there was a problem in the sense that a lot of people wanted to get into the market, but to get into the market, they needed the spectrum. And the question arose of how you should make the allocations. Now, traditionally, as you've said, they would have been made by the government just deciding which companies they thought looked the best and made the best promises. But then gradually over time, it became apparent that the mobile market was fairly homogeneous. So there wasn't a vast amount of difference in quality, as might be the case, for example, in broadcasting. And so and there was also a lot of people who wanted to get into the market. And so the government decided that the best thing to do would be to let things sort themselves out. That is to say, give the companies the opportunity to bid. And then they hoped, and to some extent that was realized, that the ones who are best equipped to use the spectrum will be able to bid the most. And so you get efficiency in spectrum use. And I think that was the start of it.
Gérard, did governments want to go in the market direction, or was it difficult for some governments to give control to the buying and selling of spectrum?
I'll answer with an anecdote. I happened to be in the office of the person in charge of the telecommunications industry at the Ministry of the Economy in France, you know, a long time ago, and there was a debate about how to open the market, like Martin said, to a multiplicity of the other operators in mobile telephony. And the debate was raging. Some people said we should make the decision, particularly, you know, the Ministry of Industry in France has a strong tradition of Colbertisme, state intervention. And some people were enthusiastic about market mechanisms, you know, auctions, etc. And then the news came that the Minister of Finance at the time, who had absolutely no clue about telecommunications or mobile telephony, etc., but what he saw, you know, was the huge bonanza that his ministry, the Ministry of Finance, could get. And I remember the person in charge saying the minister has stars in his eyes. So that was the economic argument, you know, the stars in the eyes of the Minister of Finance, which led to the progressive, France didn't actually initially do auctions, but it progressively it went into auctions. But the I would say the rationale it was as an economist, I would say it was a trade-off. It was some kind of suboptimal.
Well, let's have a little look at that. Martin, what does selling spectrum look like? Buying and selling spectrum, is it like buying and selling water, land? Give us an idea.
Well, I think probably the best analogy is land, because there's a finite amount of land. There's land of different quality. There's the various ways in which land can be held. I mean, it can be held either as leasehold or as freehold, you know. And so you can lease it or you can own it. And there's been a market in land for heaven knows how long, you know, millennia, I imagine. And so I think it's quite a good analogy. And of course, the other thing is that land can be of different quality. And some's good for keeping sheep, some's good for growing wheat. And the latter tends to be rather more valuable than the former. And there are also, with land, there are interference problems. For example, if I've got a wheat field and another farmer's cows get into my wheat field, then they can destroy it quite quickly. And so you have to have kind of barriers, you know, fences and things like that, and policing. So I think that's quite a good analogy. But obviously, it's you know, the spectrum markets have only got a sort of like a 30-year life rather than a life of many thousands of years.
We're also being able to use more and more obscure bits of the electromagnetic spectrum as technology improves. And I think I liked your idea that if you've got an awful field full of stones, technology can improve the quality of that land. That land becomes more expensive as technology changes, I guess.
That's another factor as well.
Gerard, but there are lots of nuances, aren't there, in selling spectrum, because you've kind of got to decide what you want the spectrum to do. So it's complicated. Explain that part of.
Yes, like you say, it's complicated. Well, actually, the idea, you know, the beginning of this millennium, the idea of the ideas which were debated about the radio spectrum were very much in line with the general trend towards liberalization, deregulation, and this applied not only to telecommunications or mobile telephony, but also to the airline industry, public services in some countries. So it was a general trend, and people were looking for more efficiency in the use of the natural resource. But the radio spectrum is a natural resource. As a natural resource, its quantity is limited. And the like we said, although technology allows us to use more and more radio frequencies, but still the there are limitations in the existing natural resource. So there was a lot of enthusiasm, you know, at the beginning of the millennium, in the progress which could be expected from applying market mechanisms to the use of this limited resource of the radio spectrum, and the vision at the time. And we had visionaries, revolutionaries like Martin Cave, and we wanted to apply, you know, more flexibility, more efficiency to the use of the spectrum across the board. The idea was that progressively the debate about the market mechanisms applied to radio spectrum for mobile telephony would extend hundreds, thousands of users of radio spectrum, because we have to remember that of course auctions and licensing of telecommunications mobile telephony operators is very spectacular, It's like you're looking at the you know, the poker games in Las Vegas. But we have to remember that the radio spectrum is used for, you know, really a huge number of areas, and to begin with the defense, interior, you know, firefighting, radio astronomy, broadcasting, of course. So there are hundreds of applications, and the idea was that progressively we would gain efficiency by applying market mechanisms to an always bigger number of those services or technologies.
So, Gerard, the market mechanism and auctioning and so on is actually applied to territories within the spectrum that are not just about mobile telephony. More and more sectors are depending upon the market mechanism.
But what happened is that in the end, there were attempts at expanding the market mechanisms to other users, but it in particular, you know, there were experiences in the UK applying market mechanisms for spectrum for civil aviation. There are so-called market mechanisms applied to the defense spectrum, in the UK, and Martin is more familiar than I am with this. In the UK, the Defense Department pays for its spectrum, but as it gets the money from the Treasury, it goes back to Treasury. Whether we can consider this market mechanism is debatable. So in the end, we can say with two decades of hindsight now that yes, market mechanisms have been applied to an important element of the spectrum using industries, which is mobile telephony. It has not been applied to another important element, which is broadcasting. And in the end, so it has been successful. It has helped introduce competition and fantastic technological progress in mobile telephony and progress in services. But I would say that this progress has been limited in its extension. It has not expanded to other areas of the radio spectrum usage.
Okay, so there's the trend, Martin, more and more of the spectrum allocated by markets, by buying and selling, by auctions. Is that rational? What's our experience been of using the market? Is spectrum allocated efficiently that way? Is it always the only way to do it?
Well, as I've said, it's theoretically possible for a market to ensure that a scarce resource like spectrum goes to the firms which can use it most efficiently, because those are the firms which will be able to bid most for it in the auction. And I think by and large that's happened. That's to say, the more efficient mobile firms have been in a better position to bid for more spectrum. And indeed, this has led to a reaction, which is, good heavens, this is turning into a monopoly. We can't have that. And so we must limit the amount of spectrum which they can buy. But there's another facet of the auction process which I think is important. I mean, spectrum is obviously a scarce natural resource. It belongs to everybody. It doesn't, you know, it hasn't been passed down as land is from parent to child. And it's obviously worth a lot of money, and that's become apparent. I think if you add up all the spectrum auctions and the revenues from them, you get a figure of something like $1 trillion.
Wow.
Over time. And that's quite a big pot. And the question is, who should actually get their hands on that pot? And if you give spectrum out through an administrative process so that there's no associated price with it, then in essence, you're giving that pot to the companies and their investors. On the other hand, if you auction it, then it falls into the government's hands. And the government is therefore in a position to spend it on whatever it wants to spend it on, you know, which could be hospitals, or it could be defence, or it could be anything. And so that's quite an important distinction. But it also, unfortunately, creates a problem that in some countries, the government realizes that they might be able, if they reduce the amount of spectrum available, make it even more scarce, they might be able to get more money out of it by that means. And suggestions have been made in some countries where, for example, it's very difficult to collect taxes for various reasons, some governments have actually succumbed to that temptation. And of course, that's disastrous for the economy because you're sacrificing a huge avenue of growth in your economy and improvement in living standards if you do that.
So this is a system that's evolving. I mean, and will continue to evolve as you develop new techniques and new rules. And sometimes companies get their way around those rules. We learn about the side effects of making certain decisions. So will market mechanisms always be changing? Is it a shifting ground, Martin?
I think it is a shifting ground. And the interesting feature of the auctions is that you can, if you want, sort of plough back some of the auction revenues by requiring the companies to do things which is not in their commercial interest, but in the social interest. And this was used quite widely in the first decade of this century. So certain mobile licenses were associated with an obligation to extend the coverage of the service and beyond what was commercially desirable. And so what the government's doing by that means is it's using a competitive process to hand back some of the money that it's gaining from the auction in order to pursue its social objectives. And obviously, if we're concerned about the digital divide, as everybody is, I mean, it used to be getting any mobile signal. Now it's getting 5G. If we're interested in that, it's a very flexible mechanism which enables you to plow back some of that money into further investment if you want to. And the second thing that happened was that the actual mathematical algorithms that are used to implement the auctions increased enormously in sophistication. In fact, in 2020, two of the hotshot auction designers from Stanford University won the Nobel Prize in Economics for the work which they'd done on this new allocation mechanism. And so those things have gone hand in hand. And in the US, for example, they regularly simultaneously auction a spectrum in maybe 1,000 different locations. And it's capable of doing that. So the spectrum technology has improved, and there's been an increasing recognition that you can actually hand back some of the money to achieve social purposes if you want to.
So, Sharad, some of the cleverest minds in the world are working on how to use markets to allocate spectrum to different users. But I'm imagining it's always going to be an imperfect process because some will be focused on maximizing profits. Some will be wanting to maximize social value and just plain politics as well.
Yes. Well, I would say, like you said, you know, the brightest minds are busy in the telecommunications industry, telecommunication industries in the world at large. But I would say that maybe there are too many bright minds. And what this has led to very strange, awkward, I would say, situations, because the market design. Because like Martin said, there's always an element of market design in spectrum assignment. The market design has not been so successful and has had different successes in different regions. Just I'll give you an example. In the US, you have a market design with very high prices for spectrum, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars, and high tariffs. So the operators are able to recoup the cost of spectrum from their customers. The number of operators is limited. Well, the people say, oh, yes, we're in the U.S. you have hundreds of operators, but actually you have depending on the time period, you have three or four significant cellular telephony operators. So you have high prices for spectrum, high tariffs. is it good or bad? But at least it's consistent. In Europe, in many countries in Europe, we have a big problem. We have a rather high spectrum prices. For instance, in Italy, France, Germany, UK, we have high spectrum prices, but we have a competitive framework for mobile telephony, which has led, you know, the regulators across Europe. We have national regulators in each European countries. So the regulators across Europe have had, ways to have rather low rates for mobile telephony. And I often say, you know, in countries like Italy or France, you get access to all the knowledge of the world for the price of a slice of pizza, no cheese. And this is a contradiction. If operators pay high prices for spectrum, and due to competitive processes and competitive regulation, they apply low rates, they are in a bind. And the consequences, the bind is underinvestment. And this is what we have seen progressively taking place in Europe. And the Europe, which was a leader in 2G and 3G, less so in 4G, and now it's lagging in 5G. It's lagging 5G because the money the operators put into spectrum, this is just one reason, but the money the operators put into spectrum, they cannot put into the network itself because the rates are very low. So we are in a bind, and I must admit for the moment we don't have a good solution, and then it leads, you know, to government funding part of the industry at levels at 40%, 50%. So the initial vision of market mechanisms is lost. So the something we'll have to come up with in Europe is a more a more rationale, a more comprehensive vision of our market design. For the moment, it's flawed.
So Martin, what are going to be the next trends in using markets to decide who gets which bit of spectrum?
I'd just like to make a point about what Gerard said.
Sure.
There's a big debate about whether the reason prices are high is because they paid so much for the spectrum. That's one hypothesis. But the other hypothesis is they pay so much for the spectrum because they expect prices to be very high and for them to generate a lot of profit. And so that's the part of the competitive process which is responsible for that. But as for what's going to happen in the future, we're in a position now where, I mean, Europe, for example, the European Union has got very wide ambitions for extending connectivity, so-called gigabit connectivity, by something like 2030. And so that means that there has to be very substantial investments, particularly in 5G. And that's where the focus is. And the way in which that's going to be accomplished, I think, is, as Gerard said, by government subsidies, which are focused upon the areas which are more scarcely populated and therefore much, much more expensive to serve. So it's a kind of a natural function of redistribution that governments are engaged in order to achieve some kind of uniformity in the benefits which accrue to their citizens wherever they live. And that's going on, and it probably can be done in fairly competitive way, but in terms of providing 5G connectivity in major cities and things of that nature, then the market is perfectly capable of achieving that objective and is doing so quite quickly on its own, despite the presence of auctions.
But are we agreed, gentlemen, that market mechanisms have been a success? Marty, you go first.
I think they've been a strong incentive for efficiency, because if you've paid a lot for spectrum, then you realize that in order to recoup it, you're going to have to provide a good service. You're going to have to do your marketing successfully. You're going to have to make sure that the number of outages that take place is limited, and you'll have to deploy your labor force in an efficient way. And I think there is a risk that if you give people huge chunks of spectrum at a very low price from which they can make a tremendous amount of money without actually getting out of bed, then you aren't going to get efficiency in the industry. And so I think it's been successful in encouraging efficiency. We've also been quite successful in limiting a market power and by insisting that there are either three or four major operators in almost any jurisdiction that you can think of. And that's been helpful. And at the same time, of course, we've managed to capture some of those rents to either be ploughed back into the sector by greater coverage or to be used for other social purposes. So I think it's been fairly successful.
Gerard, success or failure, market mechanisms and spectrum allocation?
I'd say the market mechanisms have been successful. Broadly speaking, they have allowed the introduction of a fantastically innovative services to citizens, to consumers. So, but in a way, I would say the extension of market mechanisms, pragmatically speaking, I'm not talking about the basic doctrine of market mechanism, but it seems to me they have reached pragmatically the limits of the application in radio spectrum management. And what we observe, according to me, what we observe is a shift to, while maintaining market mechanisms where they exist, but there's a shift towards, a focus on more different ways to manage in a more agile way the radio spectrum. And agility in the radio spectrum is the next frontier, I would say, in the next few years. And this will be achieved through the, spectrum sharing, the application of artificial intelligence, more progress in spectrum spectrum sensing, in spectrum monitoring. So there's a shift towards a hybrid model of radio spectrum management, combining market mechanism on the one side and technology evolutions on the other side, and agile ways of managing the spectrum. So we are shifting towards a mix of market mechanism and technology flexibility.
Great. Well, thanks both of you, Martin Cave and Gerard Pogrel. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
It was a pleasure.
In our next show, we'll see how spectrum policy has changed based on experiences with 5G and expectations of 6G. So join me, Tim Jenkins, again for Spectrum Policy 101, brought to you by Policy Tracker. And if you'd like to learn more about policy issues relating to spectrum management, please take a look at Policy Tracker's training courses, newsletter, and research, all of which is available on our website,